Hello everyone and welcome to Fitness Mentor's PowerPoint presentation of Chapter 1 from NASEM's Essentials of Personal Fitness Training. My name is Eddie Lester and I'll be taking you through this PowerPoint presentation today. So, before we get started, I want to kind of go over how you guys can use the PowerPoints in your learning. The PowerPoints are going to go over the specific topics from each chapter that are going to be important to know for the test, as well as stuff that's going to be important to know for your personal training clients and your personal training, future personal training career. So let's go ahead and look up on the screen above where we clicked play for the lecture. And on top, you'll notice some toggles for right and left. Also, you notice the slide number out of 31. Follow along with me. I'll tell you when to flip over to the next slide. And you can zoom in, zoom out based on your preferences as well. So looking at the first page or slide one, chapter one is the scientific rationale for integrated training. So let's go over and click over to slide two. All right, so objectives for this chapter: explain the history of personal training, discuss the increasing need for personal trainers, demonstrate an understanding of the principles of integrated exercise program design, and describe the optimum performance training model or the OPT model. Let's go ahead and click over to slide three. So in the past, basically the 1950s and 60s, gym members were predominantly men training for specific goals such as power, size, strength, or even like athletes to improve performance. And also we had guys like Jack LaLanne and Joe Gold opening their first health salons or gyms. And really you didn't see too much participation in fitness, as most people were generally active because there was less desk jobs, less people sitting behind computers. So there wasn't as much participation back then, but if there was gym participation, it was just basically the people looking to get jacked and tan, working out, you know, with other men in gyms looking to gain muscle and impress the ladies, more or less. So clicking over to slide four, then we move into the 70s. The popularity of health clubs grew immensely, with people like Jane Fonda kind of getting in her 80s gear or 70s gear with her afro and headbands and 80s onesies, leotards, whatever you want to call them. Also, you had people like Richard Simmons going crazy doing aerobic workout videos or step aerobics. But typically the people in the gyms, which gyms were mainly like a really good place to socialize or meet people and grew in popularity, but most of the experts were gym staff whose physiques may not guarantee knowledge. And many injuries occurred due to bad training because it was basically people saying, hey, this is the way that I got in shape, so I'm going to have you do the exact same things that I did, and you're going to get in shape too. Which everyone is going to be different with different movement impairments, with different strength levels, and it's going to lead to a potential increase for injury if you just stick to one program, as in like one size fits all fitness. So let's go ahead and click over to chapter or slide five. So the rise in chronic disease. Chronic diseases such as diabetes, heart disease were rampant or are rampant. Such diseases are largely preventable with a good lifestyle choices, for instance, eating well and working out. And chronic disease now accounts for 70% of all deaths in the U.S. Chronic disease now affects nearly everyone in America in some way. So 70% of all deaths, if someone told you that all you had to do was eat clean and exercise, I think that would be something that would motivate me to continue or to try to prevent those chronic diseases. Moving on to slide six, common chronic diseases. The U.S. Center for Disease Control reported in 2006 that five of the six leading causes of death were from chronic disease. 57% are caused by cardiovascular disease and cancer alone, and of these deaths, 80% could have been prevented with a healthy lifestyle. And that healthy lifestyle, eating well, focusing on nutrition, and exercising, doing some cardiovascular exercise, some weightlifting or resistance training can be very good. Obesity is the next slide, slide seven. At present, 66% of Americans over the age of 20 are overweight, and 34% or 72 million people are obese. More than 9 million youth are overweight. So we are basically have a rise in this obesity, and obesity would basically mean a BMI of over 30. So moving on to slide eight, once again, we get into the BMI and obesity. Obesity is a BMI over 30. So what is BMI? It's going to be in body mass index. I'm sure you guys have heard of the scale. Or basically obesity is going to be 30 pounds overweight or more. And then we also have an overweight classification for BMI, which is 25 to 30. And if you're 25, when your BMI exceeds 25, you do have obesity-related health problems that increase with body mass index. And that is going to be important to know for the test, is that when you start to get into that overweight category, you are going to be at risk for disease and obesity-related health problems. So a desirable BMI for adults is between 18.5 and 24.9. And a body fat percentage of 25% or greater is considered obese for men, while 39% or greater is obese for women. Moving on to slide 9, blood lipids, also known as like high cholesterol and triglycerides, are also something that we need to monitor. HDL, or high-density lipoproteins, is considered the good cholesterol. LDL, or low-density lipoproteins, is considered the bad cholesterol. A healthy total cholesterol level is less than 200 milligrams per deciliter, and that's what MG/DL means, is milligrams per deciliter. Moving on to slide 10, diabetes. We have two types of diabetes. We have type 1 and type 2, or juvenile diabetes, and adult onset diabetes. Type 1 is going to be from the pancreas not producing insulin. This typically occurs within the first year or two of a child's life. And what's bad about this is that a blood sugar cannot be controlled because there is no insulin production by the pancreas. In type 2 diabetes, or adult onset diabetes, it's basically 90 to 95% of all diabetes is type 2. And this is the type of client that you might come to you that is obese and has issues controlling their blood sugar. But specifically, type 2 diabetes produce adequate amounts of insulin, but their cells are resistant to it and do not allow the cells to bring adequate amounts of glucose into the cell. So it's almost like you have someone that's annoying you constantly, as if insulin was like your little brother, and insulin's going to be constantly poking you, and then eventually you're just going to say, hey, I don't want you around, so you're going to resist it, or you're going to basically give him a noogie, put him in a headlock, throw him down, whatever you call it. So this is known as insulin resistance. It's basically when something occurs so much, you get annoyed, or the cell would get annoyed and resist reacting to it. Moving on to slide 11. So as far as diabetes goes, or continuing on the topic of diabetes, more than 80% of patients with type 2 diabetes are overweight or have a history of weight gain. And complications from diabetes can include nerve damage, vision loss, kidney damage, sexual dysfunction, and decreased immune function. Moving on to slide 12. Aging population. Americans are living longer lives. The U.S. Census projects between 2000 and 2030, the population of people over 65 will increase from 12.5% to 19.6% of the population. So we're going to have a huge increase in the adult or the elderly population, which is 65 or older. And over 80% of all persons older than 65 have at least one chronic condition, and 50% have at least two. And the reason for this population increase, or of this elderly population increase, is due to the baby boom when after World War II, like 1945, 1946, through about 1969, the economy was great, men were returning home from World War II, and everyone was just having a great time, and the American dream was kind of born, and really, there was lots of procreation going on, to say the least. So, moving on to slide 13, a lack of physical activity. In 2002, the World Health Organization recognized the lack of physical activity as a significant contributor to the risk factors for several chronic diseases. Despite this, very few people engage in the recommended 30 minutes of activity 5 days a week. Moving on to slide 14, evidence of increased injury, low back pain. So, our clients will also be, most of them will have had some sort of injury in the past. Low back pain is one of the most common and affects at least 80% of adults. The predominance of people who have low back pain work in office buildings or manual labor jobs and often display altered lordosis or altered curves of their back. Knee injuries, moving on to slide 15, 80 to 100,000 anterior cruciate ligaments occur annually in the United States, and 70% of them are non-contact. So basically, having or not Like in football, if you were to get hit, that would be contact. Non-contact would be in football when you're in the open field and you're running and then all of a sudden you stop really quick and maybe hyperextend a knee. That would be considered a non-contact ACL injury. And most of these ACL injuries occur between the ages of 15 and 25 when you are the most active, college, or participating in sports. Moving on to slide 16, other musculoskeletal injuries. Unnatural posture caused by improper sitting results in increased neck, mid, low back, shoulder, and leg pain. And the monetary value of these injuries or treating these injuries is $120 billion. And what's great about personal training is that you get to be one of the people treating these injuries, which, hey, you get a cut of that $120 billion, hopefully all of it. All right, moving on to slide 17. Current training program. The intensity required by sedentary people trying to improve their cardiorespiratory fitness level might put them in a state of excessive overload. The initial 6 weeks of training, there was a 50 to 90% injury rate in one study. And I typically see this in the people that try to participate in cardiorespiratory exercise to lose weight. They haven't done too much and they're like, oh, summer's coming around, so I'm going to run, you know, 1 mile a day and then add a mile every other day or something. That is going to basically put them at a risk for increasing injury, such as knees, hips, ankles, low back. And typically, I just like the studies see people fall off and drop off of their training program because of injury. Moving on to slide 18. Deconditioned is more than being out of breath when climbing stairs. It's a state of potential muscle imbalances, decreased flexibility, or lack of core and joint stability. These conditions can affect the ability to produce power properly and increase risk of injury. So yeah, it's important to understand that you really, deconditioned is way more than just being out of shape, people may say, like out of breath. It's caused by lack of flexibility, lack of strength, the inability of, or lack of coordination or inability to control the core and things of that nature. Slide 19, current training programs. Most traditional training programs do not emphasize multi-planar movements or moving in one more than one plane of motion. And because of this, many injuries occur in the transverse plane, or transverse plane is going to be like rotational type movements. They don't include the full muscle action spectrum, so within full ranges of motion and full muscle actions, as in concentric, isometric, and eccentric, which we'll get into further or in other chapters. And they also don't include a proprioceptively enriched environment, which is going to be like stabilization or balance type training. Moving on to slide 20. The future. Due to all of the above, the personal training industry is expected to increase much or at a much faster rate than other industries, according to the U.S. Department of Labor. Training programs must be designed by personal trainers with consideration toward the person, the environment, and the task to be performed, as well as their goals, their muscle imbalances. It needs to be very individualized. NASM presents the rationale for integrated training and the optimum performance training model. Moving on to slide 21. The OPT model, or integrated training in the OPT model. Optimum performance training model is what the OPT model stands for. Integrated training is a concept that applies to all forms of training. So within the OPT model, you have flexibility, cardiorespiratory training, core training, balance training, plyometric, and resistance training. Also, you may have something like speed, agility, and quickness training. Moving on to slide 22. What is the OPT model? A process of programming that systematically progresses any client to achieve optimum levels of physiologic, physical, and performance adaptation. And it's specifically divided into three levels of training, which is stabilization, strength, and power, which are all goals of fitness. Each level contains specific phases of training, which identify even further more specific goals. The stabilization level is phase one, or what's called stabilization endurance training, as we move on to slide 23. The main focus of stabilization training is to increase stabilization strength and develop optimum neuromuscular efficiency. That is going to be an important thing to know for the test, as well as all goals of each phase or level. The progression for this stage is training in a or is proprioceptively based. So for instance, hey, I'm standing on one leg on flat ground. To progress that, you would want to stand on one leg on maybe a Bosu ball or a foam pad that might be less stable or a balance beam. And yes, once again, the stabilization training block consists of phase one stabilization endurance training. Moving on to slide 24. The goals of stabilization endurance training is to enhance joint stability, increase flexibility, enhance postural control, increase neuromuscular efficiency, and improve muscular endurance. It is extremely important to know that the stabilization endurance training, or phase one, is going to, one of the main goals is to improve muscular endurance. That would be good to know for the test. Moving on to slide 25, the strength level. The emphasis is to maintain stabilization strength while increasing prime mover strength. So it's like a combination of a stabilization phase as well as increasing the prime mover strength, or the main mover or agonist strength. Individuals will also progress to this level of training if their goals are hypertrophy or maximal strength. The strength training level consists of three phases of training. Phase two, which is strength endurance training. Phase three, which is hypertrophy training. And phase four, which is maximal strength training. So let's go over each of those individually. Moving on to slide 26. Strength training phase two, or strength endurance training. The goal is to improve stabilization, endurance, and increase prime mover strength, improve overall work capacity or build volume, enhance joint stabilization, increase lean body mass, or get toned would be also a way to say that. Training strategies include resistance training, such as a superset or supersetting one strength exercise with a stabilization exercise per body part. And an example of that would be like a bench press followed by a stability ball push-up. And to explain a superset really quick, a superset is going to be where you take one exercise and then you immediately do another exercise without any rest after it. Moving to slide 27, strength level phase three, hypertrophy training. They don't focus too much on hypertrophy training throughout the entire book, but hypertrophy training, the main goal is to achieve optimum levels of muscular hypertrophy. And basically what that means is to gain muscle or to increase muscle size. I would typically look at this as increasing muscle tone, or maybe definition as well. You would be considered like a hypertrophy goal. And this phase is optional depending on the client's goals. For instance, if someone just wants to lose weight and doesn't really care about gaining too much muscle, you don't necessarily have to do hypertrophy type training. Moving on to slide 28, strength level phase four, or maximal strength training. The goal is to increase motor unit recruitment, increase frequency of motor unit recruitment, and improve peak force. This phase is optional depending on the client's goal as well. If someone isn't interested in trying to lift something that's very heavy, you don't necessarily have to move into this type of training. And when they say increase motor unit recruitment, we have motor units that are basically what you consider individual muscle fibers. And the more muscle fibers that you can recruit, the more power or strength you can output. So when they say motor unit recruitment, that's basically what they're talking about. Moving on to slide 29, the power level. This stage of training emphasizes the development of speed and power, and specifically, they want you to know rate of force production is going to be very consistent with the power level. And the power training block consists of one phase of training, which is the power training, or phase five power training. Moving on to slide 30, power level phase five training. Power training, the goal is to enhance neuromuscular efficiency, or moving in a coordinated way, increase rate of force production, enhance speed strength. Training strategies would include resistance training, such as supersetting one strength exercise with one power exercise per body part. An example of that would be like a barbell squat followed by squat jumps. So the two phases in which we're going to want to superset are going to be phase two, strength endurance training, and phase five, power training. And once again, that superset is one exercise immediately followed by another exercise without any rest. So let's go ahead and head over to the last slide, just kind of summarize what we went over. So today's automated environment produces more inactive and non-functional people and leads to dysfunction and increased incidence of injury, including low back pain, knee injuries, and chronic disease. The OPT model provides a system for properly and safely progressing today's client to his or her goals by using integrated training methods. And the OPT model consists of three blocks of training: stabilization, strength, and power. Be sure to go over the book lecture below, as well as complete the assignment and the quiz to complete this lesson. Thank you so much. Look forward to seeing you at the next chapter.